Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Lauren Nykirk, and thank you for listening to the show today. Today the show is called Invisibly Autistic, The Surprising Truth About Seeming Normal. Just a couple of days ago, I came across an article about a new autism screening tool. And this autism screening tool is supposedly quite effective and accurate. And so, of course, my curiosity was up. And I wanted to see how my son and I did on the screening. I wanted to see how accurate it is. I know for a fact that he and I both have Asperger's, so I was just wondering where the score would fall. And, excuse me, my son is 18, and I'm an adult with an 18-year-old son. And I sent it to him. I texted it to him, actually, and he took it in one room, and I took it in the other. And at the end, we compared scores, and mine was higher than his by quite a few points, and he was pretty surprised. He expressed a little bit of doubt. He thought for sure that he would be lower than me, so I sent him a screenshot of my score, and I proceeded to give him a hard time about not believing his mom, of course, and he said to me, "It's just that I've never seen you block out sounds or not liking sounds, etc." I must say that in the screening, there were a lot of questions about sensory issues. And interestingly, he had forgotten something fairly important to me. So I said to him, "You've never seen me cover my ears when a water bottle is crushed, literally cover my ears, or cover my head with pillows when two lawnmowers are going simultaneously." He said, "Oh, yeah," and he laughed, and he said, "Never mind." He did remember after that, after I reminded him that there are some sounds that are very intense. Not only do those sounds bother me, but I have intense physical reactions to a couple of smells. I do not like spaghetti. It makes my eyes water. And then also, it doesn't matter what's in the spaghetti. If it smells like spaghetti, it does things to my eyes. And then same with cinnamon. Cinnamon can literally make me cry. Now, another issue for me personally, which is not as extreme but certainly troublesome, is my photosensitivity. Headlights at night are especially bad for me. If you pair this with an area that has no street lights and a bunch of blind curves, I am an absolute mess. These are things which cannot be seen. Obviously, there are smells that a lot of people dislike. That's not all that unique. There are a lot of sounds that people don't like. That's not all that unique, but the intensity is very strong, and that's what's different. The only challenges I have, but they certainly make the example about an invisible disability a more simple one. My son is another example of this invisible autism. Long ago, his autism was very obvious. In public, managing his behavior was probably a little like trying to restrain a tiger. It's just not advisable. You don't want to do it. But a lot of work, and about 15 years later, and now he, quote, seems pretty normal. This was especially challenging in high school with teachers who weren't familiar with autism because they look at him and they see a normal kid. He's very intelligent, and in many of his classes, he made good grades under the right circumstances. Classes that were mostly learning and tests were great for him. But when assignments or projects needed to be managed, problems set in. There were problems with organization and time management and things like that, and just kind of keeping some things straight. But although organization and time management were a challenge, the real biggest problem came to his writing. Now, if you're familiar with autism, especially if you're a parent of a child with autism, this whole writing issue will not be a new one to you. This is a very common problem for many people on the spectrum. I personally believe it has to do with how the brain processes the different steps in writing, not the least of which is transference of thoughts to paper by using the hand to actually do describe. Interestingly, when he had an accommodation to use the computer for all written assignments, he did much better. And And just that change, the change from typing versus writing, made a huge difference. It's not painful for him to write. Writing is not something, I mean, if in certain circumstances, writing is not a problem for him whatsoever. However, when it comes to assignments like this, doing the actual physical writing was a real challenge, whereas he could get on the computer and excuse me, and he was able to communicate better. And this is not unique, not terribly unique among people with autism. So, of course, as English teachers, generally understood this. They understood that having those words flow through his fingers to print on the paper just wasn't working. And with the volume of writing, it was crucial to have solutions in place. But on the other hand, in classes with minimal writing, his intelligence and articulate nature swallowed up his shortcomings. Teachers would often get upset about his, quote, lack of effort on writing assignments. And while sometimes he simply wasn't trying hard, that's true. I mean, he isn't a teenager. And I think everyone can fall into that. And while sometimes that was the case, most of the time it was related to his autism. Another situation we saw repeatedly with him, especially in high school, it happened ever since he was very young, but especially in high school, is he'd become overstimulated and or overwhelmed, and he would withdraw into his own world. And when a child is 4, withdrawing might look like hiding in the closet, hiding under the bed covers, hiding under tables. a lot of stimming is actually withdrawing. For instance, when kids are staring at fans, kind of a zoning out. I know that's something I used to do a lot when I was younger, and I still catch myself doing it from time to time. When things spin, sit there and stare at them, and it becomes a way to kind of zone out, which is a form of withdrawing. Excuse me. So when a child is 4, this might look this way, and it's more obvious, especially when you know the child has autism. But when a teen in a high school classroom withdraws, it's a very different situation. You can't go and hide in under the covers or hide in your closet. A teenager with autism in high school might, like Chili, put his head on the desk to try to withdraw. Of course, in a typical high school classroom, when a teacher sees a teenager with their head down, it looks like a tired kid who doesn't want to learn. In this case, it was an overstimulated boy who wanted to learn so badly. He was trying so hard and eventually became burnt out with the stress and stimulation, depending on the situation, what was going on, and sometimes the pressure to produce. And he would put his head down just in order to tune the world out. There were some pretty embarrassing situations that I had to address with the school because the teacher did not understand that this is what was happening. And so she was trying with all her might to get him to stay awake when he was intentionally trying to withdraw. Okay, so that's a 4-year-old and then a teenager, but what about adults? You put an adult in a similar predicament where they are overstimulated and overwhelmed. And what does that look like? It can look like a number of different things. One of the things it can look like is depression or other mental illnesses. And so when kids with autism grow to be adults with autism, that is what I preach. I've been preaching that for years. And the problems don't always necessarily go away. We can manage them better. We can assimilate better. But the problems don't always go away. They sometimes look differently. Excuse me. Just because someone is an adult doesn't mean they don't have meltdowns. They might not look like meltdowns. They might not be about yelling and screaming and what have you. But it's a similar, you know, still a similar kind of problem. And in our society, when we have people on the spectrum who, you know, when they seem normal, it can be problematic because a lot of stigma sets in. If you have someone who let's say you have someone at your work who has autism and they become overwhelmed or they become burned out, there's a possibility that, that they could exhibit signs that look a lot like depression or some kind of mental illness. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. I'm just saying that some of the symptoms may seem similar. And if someone doesn't stop and say, you know what, that person has autism, I don't know what's going on with them right now, I'm going to give them some time and space to figure some things out, I'm not going to judge. People don't do that. Most people look and they make a knee-jerk reaction. And if someone, let's say someone at your work, seems quite normal, so normal that you have a hard time seeing their autism, and they do something that seem like, let's say, depression or mental illness, one might be have a knee-jerk reaction to make a judgment about that. And I think it happens all the time because people don't understand autism. They don't understand how those different symptoms that are seem more typical as kids, how they can manifest as adults. So we're going to take a break for just a few minutes, and we'll be back to cover a little bit more on this. Okay, we're back. I've been talking about invisible autism, and basically it's frequently sometimes disabilities are referred to as being invisible disabilities. That's becoming quite common. Invisible autistic or being invisibly autistic isn't any different, really. It simply means that there is a disability which one cannot see. On the medical side, an invisible disability might be epilepsy, it might be diabetes, things like that. There are certain needs need to be met, and unless you have direct knowledge about the particular disability, you're going to be unlikely to know anything about it, or maybe that it doesn't exist. Not to mention being a little unclear about how it may or may not affect their life. So being invisibly autistic is very similar. The difference is that unless people have autism or have a close family member with autism with whom they are closely involved, they're not likely to understand all of the ways that that person's disability manifests in their life. Part of what I have long been quite vocal about is the importance of teaching our kids the right things. Fortunately, in the past couple of years, I've seen a little more people have been a little more vocal kind of in the media and community in general about the public school system, not focusing on the right things. And I think that part of the reason is the phenomenon of kids staying home with their parents, kids living at home with their parents instead of kids going to college, being at college for 4 years, getting out of college, getting a job, and living on their own. You have a lot of what are they called, boomerang kids, something like that. And so I think that there's a lot more focus on, okay, what are we teaching our kids so that they can be independent? And when it comes to autism, this is even more important because obviously repetition aids learning. If you hear something over and over and over again, you're going to be a lot more likely to internalize what is being said. This is one of the reasons why
when we receive negative messages as children, we end up repeating those tapes in our head because it's been reinforced repeatedly. And learning skills is no different. Excuse me. And I know that that isn't rocket science. You know, that's probably common knowledge. But when it comes to teaching skills that are going to aid someone in being independent, the importance of that cannot be overstated. It's hugely important to start teaching skills young. As parents, and trust me, I was not diagnosed until I was 38. I had a son who he was not vocal. There were lots of obstacles that my son had. When he was young, we had to have a handicap placard because he was not safe in the parking lot. He would literally pull out of our hands and dart across the street. there were a lot of problems when he was younger. Excuse me, but when parent of a kid with autism, it's easy to stop and say, you know what, I'll take care of that myself. I'll do that myself. Because after all, they have autism and it's harder for them. Perfect example of this is recently my son and I went to community college and we walked up to the desk in order to get some things taken care of. And I spoke up. I said, my son is, and he stopped me and he said, I thank you, for speaking up, but son, why don't you tell me why you're here? And they were very proactive about getting the kids to speak up. And I really kind of had a light bulb moment. It was a real world kind of application where I was stepping in on behalf of my son. I was advocating on his behalf, which is something that I've done for a very long time. When really he needed to step up and speak for himself. Did it take him a while to get the words out? Yes. Was he a little unclear and a little bit confused about what he was saying? Yeah, he was. But you know what? The next time we went, he was more clear. And the next time we went, he was more clear. And so it's one of the very important life skills that we have to teach our kids. There needs to be less emphasis on academics and more emphasis on life skills. And, excuse me, I'm having allergy problems, if you couldn't tell. And so one of the more important life skills to teach is self-advocacy. And to most people, or to many people, especially those who are not on the spectrum, excuse me, self-advocacy might be a new term. Basically what it means is when one is advocating for their own needs, they understand what their needs are and their rights are, and they can step up and ask for what they need. And they understand, why they should have it. This is a skill that does not come easily. It's a skill that has to be practiced and refined. And if you think about it, it's impossible to live independently if your needs can only be met if someone else is advocating for them. We have to teach our kids how to advocate for ourselves, and we have to do it when they're starting very young. Self-advocacy, practical skills that people with autism need to learn when they are very young. It's well known that repetition assists learning, and it's especially so when the neurological processing interferes with the task learned. So if it is more difficult, a lot of talk about executive function. If people with autism are wired to have more greater difficulty with tasks that involve executive function, then it only makes sense to start teaching these tasks younger, have there be a lot more repetition, and so it is ingrained into who they are. One of the things I did with my son when he was, much younger, was I believed it was important for him to become acclimated to change. Now, he is a very unique person because when people meet him and they think, wow, you don't seem autistic, they might think that at first. They say that a lot with me. But for him, one of the things about him that is not common is that he does adjust to change fairly well. He doesn't love it. I don't love it. You know, I don't think any of us really love change most of the time, but unlike a lot of kids in his shoes, he adjusts quite well to it. And the reason why is when he was about three, he was going to speech therapy, and we used to go on certain days of the week. We had a routine, same thing every day of the week. So we had a very strict routine. One day, we were not going to speech therapy that day. One day, we were going to do something else. Now, at this time, he was not speaking. He was, I think it was four at this time. Or he would say certain words sometimes, but not as a means to communicate. He would label sometimes, but he was not communicating. And so he didn't say, "Hey, Mom, I really don't like you changing up my schedule." He said, you know, he would just scream. Of course, you know, I knew why he was upset, because you know, he wanted to go where he wanted. When he realized that we were not going to speech therapy, he was quite upset. And so I determined at that time he needs to become acclimated. I'm not acclimated, but he needs to be able to adjust to change. And so I started routinely, intentionally changing things up. And when I would do it, there would be a positive result. So, for instance, I would say, "Well, we're not having oatmeal this morning for breakfast." Of course, that would make him very upset because he always had oatmeal. And so for breakfast, I might give him banana instead, which he absolutely loved. And so the change, he learned to internalize the fact that just because there's a change doesn't mean it's going to be a bad change. It could be a good change. And so this is something I intentionally did and set up. I started to do it when he was very young. Now, when people meet him, it's almost one of those things where people say, "Oh, well, I don't, you know, he doesn't seem autistic to me. After all, he adjusts to change." Well, trust me, there are other issues, and you know, neurologically, it's you know, adjusting to change, that working well in and of itself does not make them not autistic. So kind of one example of some of the life skills that we need to be teaching our kids at a young age so that they can adapt to that and incorporate it as, you know, what I call their toolbox. We need to give them tools that they need in order to live independently. So I've already talked, you know, I've talked about adapting to change. Another one is the self-advocacy. That's very, very important. You know, someone needs to be able to stand up and say, "You know what, I need this." As a child, it might appear to be, if a child needs to go to the bathroom in the middle of the day and not during a restroom break during school, they need to be able to raise their hands and say, "I need to go to the restroom." But if it's not that time in the day, if you know, they always take a break at 10 and it's not 10 or it's before or after 10, they need to understand that they can advocate for their needs and raise their hand and say, "Excuse me, but I need to go to the restroom." So, I mean, that's that kind of thing. Me, excuse me, or not me necessarily, but an adult might have some sensitivity issues. And at work, they might say, "You know what, I need to be able to, if there's an element in my work environment that is causing me problems, I need to be able to step up and say, that noise is bothering me. I can't think. It's interfering with my work. I'd like to go take my laptop and work in the break room. Would that be okay? Or can I move to another office? Because I simply cannot think with that banging going on in my office." So those self-advocacy skills are so crucial, and they have to be taught young because, you know, people with autism get to a point where it doesn't occur to them to step up and advocate for themselves. And so that's really something that we need to teach them how to do, our kids how to do, so that they know once they're adults and it becomes a part of their toolbox. Other skills are time management, self-discipline, self-care, organization. You get the idea. These types of practical skills are the skills that kids really need to learn. And one of the things that I've always said is, you know, when the kids are in school, we're so focused on, are they going to make a good grade in this classroom? What do we need to do to make sure that they get a good grade in this classroom? Well, you know, if we're teaching organization skills then that they can use in those classrooms. And I know that there are problems generalizing, but that's something else that you teach them. It's a constant, you know, helping your kid grow and develop to have these kinds of skills. It's not something you sit down and you do 2 hours a day or 5 hours a day or 8 hours a day. It's every interaction. It's every conversation. Excuse me, it's every day. They need to be immersed in this kind of environment that is that assists them in learning the skills that they need to learn. So, you know, for parents out there, and this episode isn't just for parents, obviously, but for parents out there, one of the things that you can do to try to figure out what your child needs to learn is look at your own life. What do you do in one day? You sit down and pay your bills. Okay, you know, you check your mail, you pay your bills, you balance your checkbook, you do some cleaning, you do some laundry. But, you know, that's if you're a mom and you're a stay-at-home mom. Those are just some examples. And what about at work? What are some of the things that you do? And then think about the skill set that you need to, that you need in order to accomplish those tasks. Write those down, and then you've got a starting point. Which skills are strong for your kid? Which skills are not strong for your kid? And teach them routinely and get them involved. Here's an idea. Let them fail. It's okay to let them fail. If you're there as a backup, you're there as their safety net. It's okay to let them fail because you lose a learning opportunity. And those moments are really important. And you want them to learn how to do it for themselves. Again, when they're starting very young. Having an invisible disability can be a challenge. There are pros and cons. It's certainly a benefit to not be as impaired as some other people who are, unfortunately, have, you know, much greater impairments and need, you know, constant 24/7 care. But for those of us who do live independently or want to live independently, knowing that other people don't see this disability is an important thing, and knowing how to assert yourself is important. Draw just kind of a soundbite, maybe one or two, maybe three sentences, something very brief, something that you can say when you're having problems. So if you're communicating with a police officer or someone at work, it's a soundbite. It's something that you can say in order to help yourself in the situation. I can't impress that enough. Well, I just want to thank you for listening today. It's been Invisibly Autistic, Surprising Truth About Seeming Normal. This is the Ask You From Radio show, and I'm so glad that you tuned in and listened. You can go to my website at askbefriendly.org, and if you need anything, there's contact information for me on that site. Please don't hesitate to contact me and give me some feedback, and I would love to hear from you. And just want to say thank you for listening, and remember to stay friendly, and I will talk to you next time. Thank you.